Hi, I'm Emily Hazard.
And I'm Becca Anderson.
And this is Grey's Anatomy Uncut, a podcast where we discuss and analyze episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Today we're on 310. It's called Don't Stand So Close to Me, which is obviously The Police. That's what it was named after. Original air date was November 30th, 2006, written by Carolina Paez, I think. It is her first and only Grey's Anatomy episode. It's also her first episode of television, which I am kind of astonished that they let somebody who has never written an episode of television write for, like, arguably the most popular money-making show of 2006. I mean, good on her.
I'm also intrigued as to what she did after this. Like, it was her only episode?
Yeah, of Grey's.
Yeah. Like, what did she do after? I don't know. Maybe I'll look that up later.
Clearly,
I was not prepared for this.
Yeah. It is directed by Seth Mann. He directed 223, which was a great episode. And it has 24.01 million viewers, which is up from last week. So that's cool.
Do you have any follow-up?
Yeah, actually, I do. So between this week and last week, we got three new ratings. So that was pretty sweet. And we also got a new review. So thank you, Emery Smith. And then just like, this isn't really follow-up, but like literally this will fit nowhere in the podcast. And I thought that it was 100% necessary to say. So in the Grey Matter blog, there's a little section, because this was around the holidays, and so if you were looking for a Christmas gift, it says, if you're looking for a nifty present, mm-hmm. Stacy McKee just told me she bought her mom a mug that says McDreamy, and when you pour hot liquid into it, the letters morph into McSteamy. Which, that's if amazing. Anyone wants to, like, send us fan mail, I request that. Make it happen. Make it happen. And I'll give you an address to send it to. Just make this happen.
Can we get a mug that says, like, Emily, and then when you pour, like, liquid into it, it turns into Becca? Or, like, vice versa?
That would be sweet. You know what we should do is make, like, ooh, you know what? You know what would be a deep cut? Is, like, have, like, a face. And then when you pour liquid into it, it like, says their quote or something. Yeah. So, like, you know that guy in 105, Pow Pow Pow?
Yeah.
Just, like, have his, like, disgusting, mediocre face on the side of a mug, and you're like, what the hell? And then you pour, like, liquid into it, and then, like, a speech bubble appears, and it just says, Pow Pow Pow. It's, like, the least satisfying, like, mug reveal ever. That's what we should go for. Just, like...
And, like, the most random character. Like, not, like, yeah. A Meredith or, like, Christina. Like, the most random...
The most inconsequential character. Like, oh, please. Yeah. Or Twisted Mister.
That. I would get on. I would be on board with
I would
with
buy
that,
that.
Anyways.
So, I have a book... of an opening statement, but would you like to go first, or do you want me to do mine first?
For the sake of tradition, I always go first, so I'm going to go first, okay. Because I demand it. This episode tackles a lot of family kind of issues, which I feel like the show really, like, as a whole, tackles a lot of family issues, but this episode, like, specifically got into kind of, like, multiple senses of family, between, like, issues with the intern family, the other all-hospital family, Meredith's two families, even George's family, and ultimately it comes to one conclusion in that, and that is family is messy. And trust me when I say that it will get even messier. Mm-hmm. And this episode's main purpose is really, I feel like, setting things up for the upcoming two-parter, which will be next episode and the episode after, and even setting up for things further down the line. But that doesn't mean it still isn't a satisfying episode. I do have to say, though, like, I love this episode, but I just feel like for the past, like, so many episodes, we've been talking about how it's, like, we're leading up to this place, we're leading up to this place, and, like, so much of it has been leading up. And so I felt like partway through this episode, like, watching it, I was just kind of like, oh, God, I just wish it was next episode. Like, I love this episode, but I feel like I've just gotten to the point where I'm, like, I'm ready for the two-parter, you know?
Yeah.
I'm ready for it.
I agree. And that kind of like brings up a question just like about TV in general. It's like, is a filler episode destined to be a boring episode or like a bad episode? Because like this episode is, I almost feel bad for this first time writer because she was squeezed into, like, sandwiched between these two amazing episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's kind of like, basically what she's dealing with is like the fallback, like the fallout from like the Burke and Christina reveal last episode and the lead up to the two-parter, you know? So it's like she's really sandwiched in between like these two like pretty massive events that are happening.
And weirdly, it kind of makes this episode forgettable. Like, I don't think any episode, seasons 1 through 3 of Grey's Anatomy, is forgettable, but if anyone would be, it's this one. And, like, 3, 13, 14, but whatever. We'll get to mm-hmm. that.
Which, like, I still enjoyed it overall, but there's, like, definitely parts that was kind of like, oh, right, I forgot this scene. Or, like, mm-hmm. you know, go ahead, read your book.
Yeah, so I just want to mention that, like, and I feel like this would be a great place to mention it, just because this isn't a huge episode, that the biggest overarching theme to the show Grey's Anatomy is the continuous development of the identity of the show's namesake, which obviously Meredith Grey. And throughout this whole show, it's done through four prominent, like, what I'm going to call sub-themes. So, like, she develops personally, professionally, familially, that's a tough word, and, like, tribally. And so, like, by personal, I mean, like, that's shown primarily through her relationship with Derek. Professionally is mainly through her experiences of learning and training in the hospital as an intern. Familial is kind of a slow development over the course of the entire show through her mother, her father, mm-hmm. her father's other secret family, and her sisters, half-sisters. And then tribally, that's like essentially intern family, like this like idea of her relationships with intern family, intern OTP. And I would say like the tribal aspect is basically just magic. Like, I don't think that I could include like a Bailey or a Callie in that tribal.
Mm-mm. At least
not yet.
Because
I think that's more of a professional.
Well, and like, I think maybe later down the line we might be able to include other people outside of magic, but for right now it's very much like they're still more in like the position of like her boss.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And that's why, like, and I know that this seems kind of like convoluted, but I bring this up in this particular episode because I do think this episode gets a lot of flack for being a like filler episode or an episode that's like sandwiched in between these two amazing storylines. But like, it does something so crucial to the plot that like,
mm-hmm.
I feel like you only really notice it on a rewatch. And I mean, I've said it before, and I probably will say it a million times more. One of the most, if not the most compelling things about this show is Meredith's constant internal struggle with identity. And it's like amazingly crafted for a freaking television show. Like, it's not even, you know, it's not a book. It's not a, like, movie where they couldn't spend years planning this out. This is like a network television show, which will always blow my mind. But she has this paralyzing fear of becoming just like her mother, while simultaneously she is so afraid of not becoming her mother at the same time. And it's like, Grey's Anatomy, like, take all my money. Like, it's just incredible. I mean, this show has shown us time and time again that fear is the primary motivator to almost everything that Meredith does. It makes sense that the most compelling episodes and storylines are those that center around this. And so, like, I guess if I had to, like, write an argumentative essay, it would be that, like, this is actually, like, one of the best episodes of Grey's Anatomy. Mm-hmm. It's just subtle.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the interesting thing about this episode is it's not in, like, the, you know, huge moments, you know, like, Christina running down the hallway, like, blood all over her, you know, it's not in those big moments. It's the developing, I mean, like, we get so much in this episode with, like, Meredith figuring out, like, family, because, like, you know, Susan and Molly are there. Mm-hmm. But then we also get such interesting relationships, like, with her and Addison is super interesting. You have the whole thing with George and his family. Like, it does a lot of, like, subtle things that I think I didn't notice as much the first time around, because, like, really the first time I feel like you're watching these things, you're looking for those big moments. It's, you know, like,
I feel like the first time you're watching Grey's Anatomy, you're barely taking it in. Like, it's just, like, emotion overload.
Mm-hmm. But I just, like, yeah. And so it might not be, like, the most entertaining episode, I guess, would be, like, the way to put it.
But the most necessary, hell yeah.
To watch, but it does so much in the development of not only Meredith, but a lot of the characters.
I guess what I would say is that you can't have the kind of payoffs that you get in 309 or 312 or 315 or 317 unless you have these episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And very I true. Guess I'll leave it with that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you mind reading this little section from the Grey Matter blog? Because I think it's pretty interesting.
Well, I guess first to mention, there's no opening speech in this episode, which is kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the Grey Matter blog goes, that's exactly what this episode is all about how being too close to something can be a disaster, or a completely enlightening experience, or both. And in the spirit of the holidays, we decided to illustrate this point through the one thing we can never seem to get too close or too far away from this season, our families. Our biological families, our step-families, our surrogate families.
I feel like throughout my Grey's Anatomy watching experience, like, I never really appreciated season 3 as much as I do right now during this rewatch, because they kind of used up all the obvious themes in season 2, and the writers are, like, doing, like, some hard work coming up with good mm-hmm. themes, but they're, like, kind of, like, nailing it. Like, that theme mm-hmm. is, like, both intriguing and complicated and just, like, just phenomenal.
Mm-hmm. I also like the thing that you don't, I guess, get as much when you're rewatching it is that, you know, like, as she says in the blog, that it was kind of around the holidays, and so many, like, holiday TV shows, you get these, like, huge emotional, I mean, Grey's Anatomy, we've gotten, like, emotional, like, family, togetherness, like, holidays things. And it's that, like, this kind of takes it in, like, a different twist that, like, I didn't even think about until I just read that.
But that's which is Grey's so Anatomy. Like, that's yeah. what it always does. Like, mm-hmm. it takes these stupid stereotypes or these, like, stupid cliches and kind of flips them on their head and makes you analyze mm-hmm. yourself.
But it also, like, I think it makes it realistic because, you know, like, family, you know, whatever sense of family you're talking about isn't always that perfect holiday episode, you know, where everyone's, you know, sitting under the tree and everything's great, you know. It's complicated, and, you know, probably, I mean, most of our families probably aren't as complicated as Meredith's, but yeah. You know, it does, like, I don't know, it makes it obviously more interesting, but I think it also, like, helps it make it a little bit more realistic.
So, as you said, there was no opening speech, and I think that that's an excellent choice, honestly, because what it does, like, narratively from an episode, viewpoint, is that it throws your audience straight mm-hmm. into an episode, and it's incredibly jarring. It sets the tone for the episode so simply and yet so ingeniously.
But I also kind of like the touch of, we really left last episode on this weird kind of, like, nothing's okay sense of the world, and so I kind of like the thing of, like, going into, like, no opening speech to be like that, like, not okay, like, weirdness thing is continuing.
Well, and the fact that, like, you go straight into this episode, they show one shot of Seattle, and then the first thing you see is Ellis Gray's face, you're like, oh fuck, like, here we go. Like, honestly, as soon as you see her, you're just like, oh my god. So in season 2 and in season 1, I think that we got, like, some hints, some aspects that, like, Ellis Gray was not you know, the most nurturing mother. She was about as nurturing as a knife, you know.
She's not winning any Mother of the Year awards.
No. But, like, I don't really think it's until season three that you really start to uncover, like, the emotional abuse that Meredith had to deal with. Mm-hmm. Like, this woman is a monster. And that's coming from somebody who worships the ground that Meredith Grey walks on. Wow. Like, this woman is a monster.
Yeah. Well, that's... Season three is, like, the whole season, in its essence, is, I feel like, really delving into that Meredith Ellis, like, weird relationship thing that you're going on. And so, like, you kind of, like you said, you had hints that, like, yeah, she's not the best in the world. But, like, I mean, you should get started. One of these first lines in this episode is, it's because I have a daughter, isn't it? He always said he didn't want kids. I should have never had a kid. And you're like, good God.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, there have been many interviews with Shonda Rhimes about season three because, spoiler alert, season three was not super well received by the general audience and not more than because a few.
It's dark as shit.
Yeah, and more than a few critics as well. It was not a well received season, but Shonda has said that the purpose of season three is to burn down everything so that in season four, you can build these characters back up. And I think that, like, there's something to be said for, like, you know, in early 2006, they're all sitting down at a table and they're saying, like, what is the worst thing that we can do to every one of these characters? What will break them at their the essence of their being?
And except, like, Izzy, really, because she already had her break.
Yeah, the season two. Although, but they mess with her quite a bit, I think.
I feel like they mess with her in the sense of, like, the fallout from that. You know?
I'm thinking of something else.
Okay, yes.
What's the worst thing that, like, with the characters that, like, where they are right now, what's, like, the darkest place we could go? And they do such a good job of it, and I don't think that that's something you can do season after season after season, but they knew mm-hmm. that they could do it in season three. And honestly, I have to respect that, because without season three, Grey's Anatomy would have been this kind of like, we're a little bit afraid to go too dark, you know? Like, oh, we shouldn't go that far. But season three is like, no, we're going that far. And actually, we're going to go further. And mm-hmm. that's, like, it's because of this season that we know certain things as Grey's Anatomy mm-hmm. type moves.
Well, and I think, like, I'll give it to a lot of the fans and the critics. This season is hard to watch. Like, if you just sit down, trying to get through this season is, like, it's hard because mm-hmm. it's so, like, it's just so much, like, darkness after another. But when, like you said, I feel like I've never really appreciated this season as much as I do right now. And it's because when you really look into it and you really look into, like, what the writers are doing, what they're setting up, what they're putting the characters through, like, when you really look at it from more of, like, the analysis standpoint rather than just, like, this is dark, this is sad, you know, like, you're, like, kind of, like, first time watching, it makes it, like, you really see kind of, like, what they were going for and what they were doing, and you really, like, appreciate it more.
Well, and it's not just that. It's that also, like, doing all this dark stuff, whether you realize it or not, is what makes Grey's Anatomy special. Like, it wasn't afraid to do some of this stuff. It wasn't afraid to make its characters really freaking immoral. Like, these are not necessarily good people, like, all good people, you know? Like, and I feel like a lot of people hate on season three for being so dark, but what they don't realize is that without this season, Grey's Anatomy itself wouldn't have as an identity. This is the identity being born.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Well, because, like you said, the whole identity of the show is Meredith, and a lot of that revolves around the fear of, you know, becoming her mother, not becoming her mother, and where do we really get that relationship? Where do we really kind of define all of that stuff? Season three.
Mm-hmm.
And it's dark, and it's messy, and it's horrible,
and it's necessary.
Because, and I'm here for it.
Because honestly, the stuff that happens in season three, the payoff is in season four. And that payoff is so freaking sweet. But you can't get there unless you have a season three.
Yeah, so we open, of course, with our queen, Ellis.
Ellis, yeah. And she's just, like, setting up the whole tone of the episode because she's pacing and like twitching, and Meredith is sitting there and
almost having like an anxiety, like I'd almost put it more like slight anxiety, but like that kind of freak out, like
she's manic basically. They're doing something with Ellen's hair. They're making it really dark, and I don't think that's a mistake either. Also, what
it's
do you
also
think
very puffy.
Yeah, true. What do you think of Meredith's outfit here?
What is she wearing?
I mean,
it's
looks
like a vest.
Yeah, it looks kind of like what like a little colonial boy would wear, like while he's like drumming his way into town to deliver news or something. I mean, am I wrong?
Somebody give her a drum set.
And Ellis says he's with her. He's with that woman, his wife. I don't think he is. Not anymore. And I, every time that they do like an Ellis and the chief or whatever, just the double meanings. Like Meredith could be talking about Derek. She could be talking about the chief. It's just amazing. And Meredith is trying to get her to calm down. And then Ellis, Ellis, of like you already said, delivered the line. It's because I have a daughter, isn't it? He always said he didn't want kids, which is interesting. I wonder if the chief just, like, that was his excuse, but, like, maybe he did want kids. No. And then she goes, I never should have had a kid. Like that. And I'm like, ugh. God. And Meredith's face is like, ugh. She's like my little baby, like, and I want to protect her.
It's this, like, horrible thing where you're like, yeah, like, should we be mad at Alice? Because, like, technically in her mind, she doesn't know she's talking to Meredith. But, like, still, she's saying that out loud to, like, someone, whoever she thinks Meredith is, and you're like,
yeah, yeah, it's more just, like, even if she doesn't think that she's talking to Meredith, it's like, you just said that, though. Like,
but it just makes it even worse that she just said that to her kid.
Yeah, yeah. And, like, honestly, Ellis dismantling Meredith's personal, professional, and familial identities is, amazing, and I wouldn't have it any other way. So here we go. So then we cut over to the chief's office, where Bailey, Christina, Burke, Derek, and the chief are all sitting there awkwardly staring in other different directions, not saying anything.
And then Bailey delivers this line, what's gonna happen to them? Like,
on her way out, she's like walking out the door, and I'm like, how is this the first time that this came up in this meeting?
Like, what was this meeting about?
Like, what, were you just sitting there and, like, not saying anything?
How long have they been sitting there talking about nothing?
Yeah, so Bailey is all fired up.
She's like, we need to crucify them.
Exactly. Like, she wants to put Burke on the cross for all of our sins.
Burn them at the stake, like... And not even Burke. I feel like she just wants to burn Christina.
Whatever. She wants to throw them on a pile of matches and dousing gasoline. And everyone else is like, eh, actually, I think we should just do nothing. As an audience member, do you think we're supposed to agree or be annoyed with Bailey here? Because I can tell you which one I am.
I don't know at this point, because for me, I don't get annoyed with the lack of punishment until slightly later. And it's when Izzy, like, makes the point that she's like, why am I getting punished for, like, doing something wrong and Christina's getting rewarded? And then, like, and that's the point where I'm like, why? Yeah, like, that's such a good, you know what I mean? Like,
right, but I'm saying,
it
like,
hits me more later.
I don't think Bailey is, like, like, I don't think the reason why she's saying this is because she's just like, oh, I care so deeply about
like
Izzy.
Justice. No, it's because they hurt her feelings and she's...
She's being a baby. And it's, like, so out of character and so annoying. I'm so tired of her acting like a baby.
And then the chief delivers this line. Technically, they've done nothing wrong. Nobody died. Which is, like, so... interesting, because obviously he's alluding to the Denny situation, you know, and also, like, brings my question, which I kind of answered, but I was like, if Denny survived, would Izzy have been punished? Yes, right? Because she still, like, cut his LVAD, you know?
I think they could have hushed it up, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think that, like, what we're seeing here is the hypocrisy of a situation like this. Like, I think you're an idiot if you think that stuff like this might not happen. Like, maybe not to the extreme where it's like, the head of cardio got shot, and now he has a tremor because his surgeon was, like, you know, so obsessed with himself and his hair. But, like, I think that stuff probably does happen like this, and they protect themselves. Like, you can't, you're kind of a fool to think that every, like, stuff yeah. falls through the cracks on purpose.
Like he said, like, there was technically under the definition, I guess I should have looked up the
definition of
malpractice, but, you know.
Yeah.
But, interesting.
And, you know what, Bailey, I don't think Burke did anything to you. Like, you were so afraid of becoming different after having a baby that fear caused you to be different.
And realistically, like, Burke was fine. Like, if he had erased her name from the board, like, he's an attending. Like, I guess he has, like, full purposes of doing that, you know? Like, it's, she's pissed off with Christina, but then, like, somehow bringing Burke into it.
And the chief speaks for all of us. He's like, I'm not understanding this. Did this situation directly harm you in some way? And I'm like, freaking exactly. Exactly. Like,
yep, he ripped my heart out.
Yeah, whatever. And then we get a scene that takes place, I guess, technically right outside the chief's office, yes. But I don't think it's a coincidence that it also takes place on the Bridge of Manpain. Because if any scene ever needed to be set on this bridge, it's this one. There is so much man pain in this scene that they might as well just ignite their red lightsabers and get it over with. Which one is Anakin? Which one is Obi-Wan? There is only one right answer to this. I want to know what you think, because FYI, there's only one right answer. You're not getting out of this. Which one's Anakin and which one is Obi-Wan?
I'm really scared of getting this wrong. Are we going solely based on, like, personality kind of thing, or, like...
I'm going based on personality, but also, like, based on the situation. But also personality. Come on.
So is Anakin Derek?
Yes.
Okay.
I hate you. Only a Sith deals in absolutes. Can you imagine that? I have the high ground, bitch. Oh my god. Because, I mean, okay, Derek is so Anakin. If you're not with me, then you're against me.
Where's Meredith? Anakin, Derek, you're breaking my heart.
You're breaking my heart. Yeah, so the gist of this scene is that Burke doesn't trust or have confidence in Derek's abilities. And Derek is really just like...
Which, granted, he complained about having to take a CT last episode, so...
What's going on? Yeah. All right. So now, intern locker room, they're still, like, making a point to noticeably detach Alex's locker from the rest of the interns. And I like how they still do that. Like, they've done that symbolism so many times. And I like how they're, like, still adding that detail. All the other interns have turned on Christina. And predictably, Christina just doesn't give a shit. Although, I think she probably does deep down, but she's not showing it.
I think she does, but I think the top thing of her list that she's, like, more upset about, that we don't really, I guess, see this episode, you get, like, slights of it, but I think she's more upset that Burke has kind of turned against her, you know? And so she's kind of like, yeah, they don't like me, but, like, whatever. And I also think she would have cared if Meredith had turned against her, because she really, I don't think, cares about the other ones as much. But, like, Meredith is, like, on her side, kind of, like, you know? And so she's like, okay.
Do you remember when Derek, like, dumped Meredith and then all the other interns were, like, gossiping in front of her face about it? What do you think the other interns think of Christina right now? Like, I would love for the camera to just pan over and have just, like, a whole, like, herd of them just, like, silently judging her.
That would be funny.
So we get a really important thing here, and that's that Christina and Burke are not even talking anymore.
Yeah.
Neither of them will cave. And here's a little excerpt from the Grey Matter blog. It says, Christina told on him because she thought it was the right thing to do, but Burke disagrees. He feels like he was going to handle the situation and that Christina just got ahead of him, and by doing so, she betrayed him.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
So then that's another example of like this like extremely close physical proximity but distant emotional proximity. Like they're not talking, you know?
Mm-hmm. I also just have to read this line that Christina delivered. Could you stop looking at me like that? It's creepy and makes you look like you haven't been fed.
Amazing.
She delivers that to George.
Mm-hmm. And like she's not wrong. So then we cut to this hallway where all the interns are following Bailey like she's the mother duckling, and Addison's mm-hmm. like, hey, Dr. Bailey, can I have Gray? And Bailey's like, you can have them all.
And Meredith's just like, ugh.
She's fine. Like, ugh, great. Like, can you imagine just how awkward that would be on a daily basis? Like, it has not been very long since Derek left Addison for Meredith.
Meredith's hair looks really cute. Yeah. That, like, little bun.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. It reminds me of a season 5 look that she has. What is that necklace that Addison has? I thought it was a ring, but it's not. Okay.
She went scuba diving in the sound and found her wedding ring.
Can you imagine if she just, like, Olympic dove off the side of that thing? She's just like, I had immediate regret. And they're all like, ma'am, get back up here. Addison tells Meredith and the audience that Molly has been admitted for an emergency C-section. And Meredith's like, Molly's not my sister. And then Addison just, like, not, like... She's already fed up with Meredith's mommy issues. She's like, okay, but technically she is.
I love that line.
And you have the same father. News alert. And Susan Gray is definitely not my mother. And Addison's like, I actually don't give a shit about your problems. I'm just trying to let you know that this is happening.
Yeah, and she's right behind you.
Yeah, exactly. Addison leaves this interaction thinking like, damn, this girl is a fucking mess. Good luck, Derek. Mm-hmm.
I also love just, like, the kind of mutual respect and understanding that, like, Addison and Meredith have for each other. Because, like, they have, like, Addison could have, can be, like, has every excuse to be, like, a complete jerk to Meredith.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, I don't know. I like it. Like, it's not quite a friendship, but it really just, like, shows how big of a person, like, Addison especially is.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that.
Yeah. I know I've said this before, but I just don't understand why they didn't have more Addison Meredith scenes. It's like intriguing just to have them look at each other. And like, I just feel like it was a missed gold mine, but whatever.
Yeah. So then we cut over to George's family, and George's mom is like, has become the intern mom.
She's I feel like
put out breakfast for you kids.
Are you hungry? First of all, like, where'd she get it? But whatever. Do you think Mrs. O'Malley is Izzy in like 30 years?
Yes.
There's like a 90% chance that she is.
Nothing sexual.
That was hilarious. And then Ronnie and Jerry are. We still don't know which one they are.
If you can tell them apart, please tell us how.
Please. Tell us and label it and send us that information because I can't.
I also just love the like Han comes in and is like, all right, which intern's mine? And they all start being like, it's mine, pick me. And then like his brothers are like, ooh, pick me. Like,
yeah.
Like, what the hell? And everyone like looks at them like when they do that. They're like,
yeah. She picks Christina though, which is. So scandalizing.
Bailey picks Christina.
Exactly.
Which is the bigger part.
Yeah. And
so naturally, all of the other ones are like, what?
And yeah, they get all angry. And I just want to mention, because we haven't mentioned it in a long time, but we get a glorious shot of Eskimo Man in this scene.
Oh, we do. And he, some person's children.
He is thriving on this nurse's station desk. He looks great. He's thriving, has no arms, but that's besides the point. He is still there.
He lost them. We don't know when.
He lost his arms.
It's truly maybe that's a tragic Anakin. Story. Eskimo Man is like predicting Derek's future.
I have the high ground.
Yeah, they all just are fighting, and Bailey's like, I hate you all.
And Bailey takes them to a different room where we get, I would say, probably the main case of this episode, which are conjoined, what are they, like 34 or something like that, year-old twins. Which, honestly...
35.
Yeah, 35. I can tell these two apart better than George's brothers.
Which is, like, really saying something, because they're twins.
Exactly. And so... These two, Pete and Jake, how do you like, overall, did you like this storyline? Like, I don't think that they're anywhere near my top patients.
No. Like, it was interesting, but meh.
Yeah. And, like, who do you think that these two are supposed to symbolize? Like, two people that are attached to each other but want to not be? I don't know.
Maybe, like, in some way, Burke and Christina, because they, like, live together still. Yeah,
possibly.
I don't know. It's just... Honestly, what this case brings me is a lot more questions about, one, how they even came up with, like, some of these things that come up. Like, I just, I don't care about any, like, the stuff. Like, later, they're like, the one guy is, like, dating this woman, Elena, and they, like,
I just love how you don't give a shit about them at all. You're just like, ugh, next.
I don't, but I'm like, it's weird. Like, Jake is dating Elena, and then they, like, weirdly are, like, going out on dates and, like, having sex in front of Pete, which is, like, that brings up a lot of more questions.
Who is attached to Jake
that I don't want the answers to a lot of those questions.
And then because of that, Elena slowly falls in love with Pete instead of Jake, and the only thing I can say is, what the fuck? Who, like, in the writer's room was like, you know what would be a great storyline? This. You guys are sick.
Like, that's, I don't give a shit about this case, but the questions I have with these two.
You know what, though? It's less about the questions between Jake and Pete, because honestly, they're pretty charming and, like, kind of nerdy in a cute Elena. Way. What the hell is wrong with Elena?
Yes. She's just like, I'm basically dating two brothers who are conjoined. And I'm not being like, oh, I wouldn't date, like, a conjoined twin or something. But, like, the choices that she has made
are questionable at best.
Twins,
I don't even know how much money it would take me to have sex with a conjoined twin while the other was still attached. But it would be a lot. Like, that's not, like, do you think she has, like, a, like, some sort of, like, weird fetish? Like, she's, like, some, like, sexual deviant? Like, there's something not right with her.
What does the other twin do? They just...
That's my question. Like, if, like, Jake is, like, on top, does Pete just have to, like, plank in, like, into the mattress and be like, I'm trying not to suffocate over here? Like, what? Or, like, are their hips attached to each other? Like, how... Oh, my God. Just, what the fuck?
The questions I have.
And then, maybe we shouldn't take this any further, but you know what? We've already gone this far into the tunnel. I mean, this, like, does, like, Pete get, like, turned on by, like... I mean, he's essentially, like, watching porn.
Well, that's... I'm like, what does he do? Like...
So, like, the body has a natural reaction, and, like,
I am so confused.
Ugh, it's disgusting. And you know somewhere that the writers of, what's the name of that show, Vampire Diaries, is like, ooh, I have an idea. Anyway, it's the most disgusting alternate reality of Vampire Diaries that you can imagine. And there's moving on from that, there's this actually, like, hysterical part where they're all, like, they've seen these patients, and Alex is walking out, or Alex, George, and Izzy are, like, following Bailey, and Alex is like, I'm calling it, it's mine. And George is like, I have two brothers, I feel their pain. And Izzy just goes, I would be great at watching this. I was like, Nailed it. Like, perfect, Izzy. I love you.
Yeah, so they're all in the case. Mark picks Izzy to help him. Basically because he thinks that she's just a hot blonde.
I mean, which she is, but she's also so much more than that.
But I also just love, he, like, tries to make... He's like, oh, yes, you know, go get me coffee, because Alex has been, like, basically his bench for, like, so many episodes. Mm. And so he tries to continue on with Izzy. And Izzy, having, like, more guts than anyone on the show, is just like, nope, I don't do coffee.
Yeah, I love that, too. And I think that, like, part of that is showing growth after Denny, because she said that Denny was, like, the first guy that saw her as more than the hot blonde. And so, like, I have no fear that she will ever end up with Mark because of that line. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I didn't see them going there simply because that was, like, the first line that he said to her. So I thought that was the show communicating that, like, Izzy and Mark aren't going to be a thing. And it's because Izzy has grown because of Denny.
But I also just love that, like, you almost see in some ways, like, the similarities a little bit between, like, Izzy and Addison, because, like, Addison was one of the few people who would, like, stand up and, like, call Mark out on his, like, crap, and now we see, like, Izzy being one of the ones that's, like, able to do that too, and so I kind of like that.
Yeah, absolutely. I have always been fascinated with those similarities between Izzy and Addison, and I think that that's another avenue that Grey's did not explore enough, to be honest.
Yeah. So then we get this short scene where basically the chief is trying to convince Derek to do it because he wants money and fame.
Yeah, honestly, like, this is my least favorite character trait that the chief has. And it exists throughout the entire show. But, like, he pushes things for the hospital sometimes, I think, for the wrong reasons. And it feels like it goes against everything that has been established about the character.
I, like, understand why they have, like, the chief kind of asking like that, because I feel like that's probably, like, a common or, like, a more common thing. But, like, it still doesn't mean that it's not annoying.
Well, it goes against what I feel like has been established about the chief's character.
Yeah.
It doesn't, like, it feels off.
Well, and it's, like, I feel like more of his character, like, yeah, he would be pushing it, but, like, if he saw that, like, his people were, like, hesitant, I feel like in his character, he'd be more likely to, like, not push them to do something that, like, they didn't want. Whereas, like, now he's, like, pushing Derek, and I'm, like, I feel like that's the part that's, like...
I don't think it's the pushing. I think it's the reasons for pushing.
Okay.
I think it's the fact that, like, it's pretty clear that he just wants the notoriety, as opposed to, like, he wants to watch Derek grow as a surgeon. Anyway, so now we're cutting over to a Susan Meredith scene, and Susan name drops Lexi here. So Lexi is at Harvard Med. Just important to remember.
Which is, I guess, the other sister that's not pregnant.
You don't know that.
That's fair. We don't. We just know that she's at Harvard Med.
I just like this part where Susan's like, it'll be so nice to have a familiar face in the operating room. Thank you. And Meredith goes, it's my job to be there. I wouldn't be if it wasn't my job.
I love how Susan seems like such a nice, like, genuine person. Like, she's not like one of those people that's just like, oh, hot. Like, it's all up in, like, Meredith's face. Like, she seems to be, like, genuinely trying to be like, oh, it's really nice and, like, all this stuff. And Meredith is just like,
Meredith is, like, a continuously a bitch to her. Yeah. And Meredith is like, does Molly know who I am? And Susan's like, she doesn't. I wanted to tell her, but your father. And I was like,
ooh. And Meredith's like, no, that's good. I'm glad.
She's like, bye. That's another hit. Like, her mother basically told her this morning that she never wanted her. And her father basically, like, just said, I don't want you.
Yeah. Or is, like, denying her. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
and Addison's face is, holy shit, this is awkward.
But it's kind of cool, I think, that, like, Susan is the one that, like, is almost, like, showing that she, like, wants to acknowledge, like, Meredith, which is, like, such an interesting also thing, because, like, that is a little bit of a relationship that they do kind of explore, like, the Susan-Meredith dynamic.
And I also thought that it was really great that they had Addison bear witness to this. because we have Addison, who, like, Meredith honestly should want nothing to do with, and she gets to witness Meredith at her most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And that's something that, like, Meredith probably hates in the moment, but, like, as a viewer, I think that that's, like, really important.
I feel like Addison is watching this and just being like, oh, shit, I thought my life was messy.
Yeah, exactly.
She's like, I thought I was confusing.
So then we get a scene with Dark George, hashtag Dark George. He is not gone, and he is just tearing everyone apart
at this point.
Yeah, look, I mean, he is getting on my nerves when he yells at Erica Hahn, but then when he says, no, she can't kick me out, I hired her, I was like, I mean, that's valid, like, good point, but it is like, it's just so opposite of George.
He's like up everyone's butt in the scene. Did you check his like whatever, and they're all like, shut up.
Yeah. So now we're in the surgery with Meredith, Addison, Molly, Susan, and Addison has a mysterious scrub cap which shows up in this episode, and I don't think we ever see it again.
Oh, the pink one?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She borrowed.
I don't hate it. I don't like it, but I don't hate it. I mean, it's Addison. She looks good in everything. She could wear a trash bag, and I would think it's the next model.
It's also, it begs the question. I had this question, which you kind of brought up here. Addison calls Meredith Dr. Gray.
Yeah.
Twice in this scene.
Yeah.
And isn't that their last, like, how does, I mean, granted, Molly is very busy with other things right now. Mm-hmm.
But it brings up, like, why is Addison doing that? You know, like, I'm not so much blaming Molly for not noticing, although she is a space cadet for not noticing that. But, like,
she's giving birth.
But they made a point in 222 to not call her by her last name.
Yeah.
Like, Addison made a point to do that. And in this episode, they're like, yeah, whatever. Like, I wonder why.
I mean, it's also not like, I feel like Gray is, like, a pretty common. Like, it's not like their last name's, like, something, like, super, like, specific that they're, like,
like Kowalski or something like that.
Something like that's like super specific, like, oh, that's weird.
Yeah. Like Hazard. It also makes me wonder how much Molly knows. Like, does Molly not know that Thatcher was ever married before Susan?
That's true, yeah. Do they even know about Ellis to that extent?
Like, even if they don't know about Meredith, which is canon, like, that's in the text. But, like, do they not know that, like, do they think that the first person that Thatcher ever married was Susan? Interesting. I don't know. It's just kind of like, and I love this part where, like, I was watching it and I totally forgot about this, but, like, when Addison was like, you want to talk her through this? And Meredith just, like, stares like an idiot. She's like, and Addison's like, Dr. Gray, I need your help here. And then Meredith just turns to Susan and she goes, the baby is not breathing.
You're like, thank you.
And then she's just like, boo. Like, she stares like a freaking idiot. And I was like, wow, nice work, Mare. Like,
you clearly went to med school.
And Addison's like, God damn it. Burned again by Meredith Gray.
Which then it continues on, you left me hanging in there, Gray. And Meredith's like, yeah.
And Meredith's like, I'm not denying that. And Addison then says, it was a mistake to let you in the OR with your family in the first place. Which, yeah, it kind of was, Addison. Like, even though Meredith, like, denies, like, all relations with them, I guess that still shows that, like, family is still family, even if you hate them.
Well, and that's, I think, it kind of shows to, like, an extent that, like, even though Meredith is, like, trying her hardest to be, like, they're not my family, like, it still clearly, like, means something to her, and so it's, like, I don't know, it's interesting in that extent.
Well, along that line, why don't you read this little part from the blog?
Sure. Meredith becomes determined not to let Susan and Molly get to her. She wants to remain professional, so much so that she volunteers to be their intern, but Mare quickly finds that this was a mistake. Being present during the birth of Laura and seeing that little tiny baby suffer, it makes Meredith realize just how much she cares about these people. Addison notices and immediately has her taken off the case.
That's interesting. Like, just hearing that made me think, like, seeing Laura as this tiny, like, innocent baby. You remember in 102 when Meredith was like, there's this baby down in the NICU. Oh, please. And then she goes, how do we go from that to this? And she's looking at, like, this rape victim, Allison, that was, like, supposed to be her. In a way, I'm, like, wondering if Meredith is looking at this baby and is just like, man, like, this baby is suffering, but, like, it has parents that want her, you know? And I didn't. I don't know.
So now we get back to a moment that I think we've all been waiting for.
Yeah.
One, Bailey is finally kind of back to acting like Bailey and delivers one of her classic Burns lines. Yeah. And for many episodes, George has just been begging for a new asshole, and Bailey finally steps up and tears him a new one. Thank God for Bailey. Both of them needed.
Yeah. Yeah, and then I just like how Han's like, the kid's a pain in the ass, and I was like, word. Like, I love George, but like, Dark George? No thanks. Hashtag Dark George is a pain in the ass. And here, I want you to note that Han really likes Christina. Like, she's like super drawn to her and even says, like, compliments her and is like, you remind me of myself. And I think that that's important because of, I think Han and Christina's relationship becomes something completely, like, a whole other animal in the future of this show. So
well, it's also interesting because if you look, like, Han's saying that, like, Christina is like her, and so it really just makes that interesting because, like, you know, Burke and Han hate each other.
Yeah, that's
true. But Burke and Christina are, like, supposed to be in love. And then, like, Christina and Han are, like, supposedly very similar. And so it just kind of brings up some of those, like, interesting, like...
Which I wasn't going to bring this up here, but because you said it, I have this weird theory that Han has, like, a weird crush on Burke. No, and, like, it sounds ridiculous.
I can see it.
It sounds ridiculous, but, like, the show is going out of its way to, like, show that Han and Christina have a lot in common. And Han kind of, like, this is a minor spoiler, but, like, as soon as she finds out that she is dating Burke, like, hates her. And I was like, is that jealousy?
Maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. That's, and yes, the answer is yes again. Burke is rocking the beige. he just look, and this is like a collared beige shirt. Actually, it looks like vomit green.
His face too is just like, yeah.
His face is essentially, I've made my bed and now I'm wearing this vomit green shirt.
Yes, I chose this color because it's perfect.
Because it perfectly encapsulates how I'm feeling. So now we get a Burke in the Chief scene set in that same room. You know what? We need to once and for all come up with a name for that room.
This room. This is like the, it's, oh man, it's a room where all the men go to, like, have, like, heart to hearts or, like, emotional talks, you know?
It's like a pain. Oh my God. It's like a pain cave.
But it's like man pain cave.
Yeah.
Because the women don't have emotional talks in there.
No.
They kind of have emotional talks wherever the hell they feel like
it. Yeah, true. Or like in Meredith's bed.
So true. In one of the beds in the intern OTP house.
Yeah. Oftentimes it's George's. Yeah. That's hilarious. So the Chief goes, you blame this on him, meaning Derek. And he goes, up until now, I have not yelled. I have not yelled because you were a guy in trouble and I was supporting you. But now I'm yelling. I like that. I've never seen a speech like that before. And I just think that it's so unique and such a cool way for to show, like, how serious the Chief is here. I don't know. It's always stuck with me.
I also just love that I passed the torch to you and you blew it.
You blew it out.
Can you just imagine, like, the Chief, like, actually, like, hands this, like, candle and it's like, here you go, Burke, and the Burke just walks up and gives
and then away. He has that face like like
like walks away.
And the Chief is like, what just happened? But I do like this line where, like, now that all the anger is kind of like dying down, he goes, "I'm tired. I'm tired of you men acting like boys."
Thank you.
And it's interesting because that episode was called Where the Boys Are, and they were kind of acting like boys in the woods as well, mm-hmm. you know?
Yes.
I don't know. This isn't my favorite scene ever, but it's still pretty good.
It's a good scene. And thank you, Chief, for finally acting like the chief of this hospital.
Yeah.
Like the one scene where he actually does act like the chief.
So now we have a scene that, again, like you said, just brings up way more questions than answers. And it's the one where they're practicing for the conjoined twins surgery.
This conjoined twins thing just brought up so many more questions than answers.
I feel like these patients, like, came in. They, like, just loaded our minds with questions and then left. And nobody ever talked about them again. Because Becca and I are just, our minds are blown. Anyway, so I have so many questions about this, like, weird, like, model that they're practicing on. I was like, first of all, why and how do they have this model so readily available?
The chief is just like, "I've been saving this model for a good time. I'm so glad I bought it."
Yeah, like, where did it come from? And then, number two, like, in the scene, Derek, like, literally tears something out of this model and then angrily just, like, throws it away. And I was like, did you just permanently break this thing? Like, can they reset it? Can you keep practicing?
Like, Derek what? Just, like, destroys it and, like, all of their hopes for practicing. They're like, "God damn it, Derek. And you ruined everything."
Yeah, again. And the third question is, maybe there's no answer, but what the hell crawled up Derek's ass and died? Like, in the great, in the immortal words of Taylor Swift, you need to calm down.
I think Derek... Bailey has been rubbing off on Derek, and now he is like, "Ooh, I've messed up Burke's hand. Burke has a tremor and lied to me about it, and now I'm questioning all of my abilities."
It's so true.
They, like, had a little... They probably had a talk in the, like, cave of man emotional pain.
We need something better than that.
Yeah, we do. We'll come up with something better, guys.
Yeah. Nothing will ever top Callie's sex dungeon, though.
Which also, I don't think is ever seen again. No. Unfortunately.
Well, I don't think, like, anytime soon, at least.
Can you imagine?
What if, like, it just, what, like, didn't season exist?
Season 16 now, and just, like, someone, like, walks in and is like, "What is this place?" And everyone's just like, "Oh my god."
And then Callie comes in with, like, a buzz cut. Anyway, Sarah Ramirez is like, "What's up?" Now, we're going to get this scene between Molly and Susan, and Meredith bears witness to it. And
Meredith is just, like, there.
Like, watching, like, the omnipresent god that she is. And I don't know if it was the writer's intention or not, but I feel like most of this episode, they're trying to show Meredith as being, like, emotionally stunted, by both by Ellis's abuse, but also by Thatcher's absence in her life. And she mm-hmm. has extreme emotional issues, like, no question. But mm-hmm. this scene in particular, I think, was supposed to show the audience how strong Meredith became because she was raised by wolves. And they use Molly to do it. Like, they have Susan be this, like, extreme opposite.
Even the wolves got rid of Meredith. She was too intense for them.
Yeah. They're like, ugh. They have Susan be this extreme opposite of Ellis, but yes. Then they also have Molly be this extreme opposite of Meredith. So, like, Molly's reaction is mm-hmm. almost the opposite of what we'd expect from Meredith, from what we know about her so far as a viewer. Like, if Meredith was in this situation, I would say that she would never even think, "I can't do this." It would simply just be, "I have to do this," you know? Mm-hmm.
Can we also just, adding more to this, like, relations, Molly's husband is named Eric.
Oh my god. Eric.
So we have Molly and Eric and Meredith and Derek.
That's so true. How the hell did I never notice that? Molly and Eric just and Meredith and Derek. Damn.
Just to, you know, further bring up those,
Look at those flawlessly hidden parallels. What if it was Eric? What if, like, Meredith, like, slept with Molly's husband?
Destroyed him so bad he went crawling for Molly.
Although, to be clear, like, the baby does appear to be white. So...
Thank you, Emily.
Anywho, and you know that the Eric that we met in season 2, he's not in the military.
Oh my god. Anyway. Now we have this other great scene with the twins that just bring up all these questions. And I like this little thing where, like, Izzy just straight up dishes another attendee.
Yeah, so far we've had Izzy doing it twice. Like, honestly, if Izzy doesn't respect you, she, like, won't even show up to your service. And then we also had Christina do it, like, last episode. So this is great.
But she, like, straight up was just like, yeah, I know Mark wanted me, but I'm out. Mm-hmm. She's literally roaming the hospital to watch other cases. She can't do anything, but she's like, literally anything would be better than hanging out with him.
And it's this scene where I feel like we learn a little bit too much about this Pete, Jake, Elena love triangle.
This is when it gets weird, guys. I mean, it was weird, but now it's even weirder.
Now it's just gross. Like,
so they have rules. Say one of us is on a dinner date. According to the rules, the other is just supposed to sit there quietly, eat his falafel, and shut up.
Which, like, why are you ordering falafels? Like, who are you?
Falafel's delicious.
They're just little balls of... I don't even know. Like, what are they? They're just, like, little balls of stuff.
It's chickpeas, usually, like, onions. There's lots of herbs.
That does sound good.
They're delicious. If you ever get takeout, there's, like, a Mediterranean place.
There is?
Yeah. It's kind of newish, but I'll tell you about it.
Okay.
But they have good falafel.
Mm, good to know. And so, apparently, when they are... naked in bed together, Pete accidentally touches Elena, and Elena is, I can't even say this with, like, a straight face. Elena's like, I'm completely fine with it. And then Jake is like, how are you completely fine with him touching you while you're naked? I'm just like, Jake, come on, wake up and smell the roses. But also, like, please stop talking. I think that there's something psychologically missing from Elena's mind.
I'm, like, confused because, like, later in the episode when they get separated, Elena, I feel like, doesn't want one or the other. She wants them both when they're conjoined. Which is just like...
These poor men are like, we found this woman that loves us, but, like, I think she's just a psychopath.
You know what I mean? Like, because she's like, I mean, like, she kind of seems interested in, like, what, like, them when they're separate. But, like, see what I mean, guys? Just questions.
I'm so grossed out by it that I'm angry. Like, the emotion has come right back around. Like, it has come all the way from ill to anger. I am angry right now. This isn't even funny. I'm just mad. I've gone through all the, like, stages, and I have not gotten to acceptance yet. And I don't know if I ever will. I was in denial.
I don't understand.
And you know what? You know what the grossest thing is that this is a Grey's Anatomy love triangle that I'm actually more okay with exploring than Callie, George, and Jasper.
Nobody wants Jasper.
Nobody needs Casper. Ever.
And if that wasn't appropriate enough, the song that starts playing after all of this is Sociopath. By Anya Marina.
Which is either Elena's, like, theme song or Meredith's. Or both.
The writers are just like, Here you go, guys.
We got the perfect song for this. And they cut over to really old guy's room where they're eating lunch. And Izzy says this line, which I will never hate Izzy, but my God, she's pushing my love for her when she says, I think it's romantic, two brothers fighting over the same woman. It worries me that Izzy thinks that this is romantic.
Like, I get the concept of two brothers fighting over the same woman. But if you put it in these circumstances, there's a lot of questions, Izzy. And now I have a lot of questions for you.
Well, and Izzy's kind of, like, placing herself in the role of Elena. Nobody's ever wanted to be Elena. Except for Elena, which should tell you something.
And then Alex, being honest, thank you, Alex. You know what's freaky, though? The whole thing. Alex is just like, what the fuck are you talking about, Izzy?
And then all Meredith has to add to this is family is complicated. And it's like, Meredith, this is beyond that.
Meredith is just delivering the, like, no shit lines. The baby isn't breathing. Like,
thanks, family Meredith. Family
is complicated. Like, thank you for delivering.
And I do like when Christina walks in and Alex goes like, oh, you're still here. You haven't been kicked out of the program yet. And I was just like, nailed it. Good job, Alex.
I appreciated that.
Yeah, and then they all take their little hits on Christina. And Christina doesn't fight back, which I honestly kind of have to respect. Because, like, I think Christina realizes that that's kind of her only move. Like, she can't really fight back. And I think it's almost like she thinks that, yeah, I deserve this. Like, yeah. I wonder if, like, Bailey isn't the only one who is upset that there is no punishment. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, I think Christina feels like she deserves to be punished.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Because she gets mad every time Meredith defends her. Because I feel like she thinks that she doesn't deserve defense. That.
Yeah, so then we get this, like, weird scene where, like, George walks in on Callie and his father talking. And Mr. O'Malley is, like, trying in his sweet, dear heart to, like, get them to talk. And I just,
Like, it's so hard to watch hashtag Dark George, but I honestly can't bring myself to be upset that he's mad at Callie. Because, like, finally. You know what I mean? Like, maybe it did take the Dark George saga for him to wake up and be mad at her. But I'm glad that he is.
Just wait a couple episodes, though.
But I do, like, this is so endearing. And honestly, like, I know that you guys probably think that I'm crazy for crying at every episode of Grey's Anatomy. But I cried here. When he goes, you're angry, George. At Callie, at your brothers, at Dr. Han, at Dr. Bailey, at Dr. Yang, at Dr. Burke. That's a long list of people to be angry at, especially when the person you're really angry at is me. And, oh God, he delivers this line where he goes like, you think I want to die and leave my boy in charge? And George is like, you're not going to die, which honestly, he's just playing with fire. He's whistling past the graveyard at this point. But here's the thing, and I really want to bring this up because guys, I have a make one change. I never picked up on the fact, it never crossed my mind, until Mr. O'Malley said this line, that George was mad at his father. It's essentially the show telling instead of showing the audience a very important character motivation, when they could have easily set this up.
See, but my question, though, is, I kind of like it because I think even George, to an extent, didn't understand that he was really mad at his father. Like, I think he figured it out in that moment, too. Like, you know how sometimes, like, you just have, like, all of these, like if you're, like, sad or something, and then something happens, and it's like, oh my God, that's why I'm sad, or, like, something. Like, I don't think even George fully understood until that moment of, like, what you're being angry at. And so I kind of liked it, being, like, oh my gosh, yeah, the last couple of episodes now make sense.
But would you, so you would rather not know? Because George can have that discovery on screen with us still, like, knowing it. Like, just because we know it doesn't mean that George can't have that moment of inner discovery.
I think it's powerful that we kind of figure it out with George.
Okay. I mean, there's an argument there. Like, every make one change in the first three seasons, it's going to be nitpicking to the extreme. Mm-hmm. But I would have preferred, like, even in season two, throw in something about how, like anything. Maybe Mr. O'Malley, like, lights a cigarette and George is like, you know those things kill you. Like, anything. Just something that small would mm-hmm. have been helpful to me.
But I also, like, brings up the question of, like, I don't know if this is so much, like, I think George is mad at his dad, but I think this is also his dad being angry with himself. Mm-hmm. You know? Like, I think, I don't know, like, it doesn't seem like, because this is, like, the only time that it really, gets brought up that, like, that stuff, and so I wonder if that's also, like, in a way of, like, him expressing, like, that he's angry and upset with himself. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, anyway, there and another an thing I didn't understand was that they had this like really touching scene where it really did seem like George was like moved by this, but then they almost immediately like all yeah. the progress that's made, they immediately just like go back on, which like takes away the importance of the scene in my point of view, because like then Ronnie and Jerry come in, and the mom, and, like, it seems like George has learned absolutely nothing, and he just continues to piss gasoline on the fire that's engulfing mm-hmm. his life, and I don't
Although
know.
This whole thing, like, with him being mad at them calling him Georgie has been, like, going on for a while.
Yeah, so at and least so, like, there's that, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, then his dad starts having problems breathing, mm-hmm. and Callie, I guess, just paged anyone.
Mm-hmm. In cardio, so Burke shows up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but that's not really the point. Like, whatever. They just needed a way to end that scene, and so they did.
Mm-hmm. But I like the kind of, like, touch of, like, Burke going to give, like, him injection, but then, like, gives it to George. Mm-hmm. Because he's, like, kind of doubting himself. Because, like, they're kind of setting up, you know, I think the thing, like, the relationship that we didn't really talk about that really got, like, hurt from this whole thing was the Burke-George friendship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like the Burke and George friendship, like, has really taken a back burner to the point where it's, like, you almost forgot about it. And this is one of those moments where it's, like, you kind of wish that Grey's Anatomy was, like, a Netflix show or something. And it just had, like, an extra 10 to 15 minutes every episode. Because, mm-hmm. like, it would help so much because, like, I almost forgot about their bromance. You know what I mean? Because it's just not been on screen very often. And so, like, it would have helped, I think, in that sense. So now we have Izzy and Mark, and I kind of like what Mark says, though. He's just like, I'm your attending. If you want to be in on a surgery, you're going to learn to fetch and stay and heal. And, like, Izzy's like, yeah, okay. But then she says, if you think this means I respect you, if you want me to respect you, you have to do something worth respecting.
Which I love.
Exactly.
Fantastic, Izzy. Ugh.
The thing that I love about Izzy is that she's always trying to do something right. And the fact that, and she's always screwing up, but like her intentions are always pure. Like she's like, she always feels bad when she does something wrong. It's like watching this amazing character like struggling so much with like doing bad things. But, like, I don't know. That's what I love about Izzy is that, like, her intentions, like, at her heart, at her core, she is a really good person. She would never hurt anyone intentionally. I really do believe that.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she also is a human, so she's petty and can mess up and does hurtful things. But, like, mm-hmm. at her core, she is, like, a wonderful human.
Mm-hmm. And now we get this super interesting scene between Bailey and Derek, and I just like that, like I said in the last thing, is like Derek is clearly kind of feeling some of the Bailey emotions and questioning his ability after like what happened with Burke,
and I think it shows so much growth in just such a simple way, because like Bailey has so much respect for Derek now, and they really communicate that here, and like that development is just so satisfying. Like, go back to season one when she was, like, so pissed off at him for, like, dating an intern, and she, like, basically thought that he was kind of just, like, an egotistical airhead.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, but she does have, like, this familial, like, respect and, like, almost, it almost goes beyond respect. It's, like, friendship with him now, and I think that that's, like, noteworthy, you know?
And it's super interesting, like, you brought that up, that it comes after Izzy made that whole thing, like, if you want my respect, you have to do something worth respecting. And clearly, Derek has done something to make Bailey earn his respect, which is super, I don't know, it's interesting.
Yeah.
Like, an interesting little touch there.
Mm-hmm. So now Jake and Pete are going into surgery, and this, honestly, like, this is such a hilarious line that I couldn't not say it. When Jake goes, when you separate us, can you make sure that his ass is bigger than mine? And then Pete goes, I can hear you. So funny.
And then I love that we get this, like, weirdly, like, Mark respects Izzy for standing up to him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, Dr. Bailey, I'd like my intern to observe from a better vantage point.
Yeah, so the Grey Matter blog says, Mark reaches out and does something incredibly kind and lovely for Izzy. He brings her into the OR so that she can watch the twin surgery up close, which is a big deal. Izzy hadn't been inside an OR since the Denny thing, and it was pretty selfless of McSteamy to step up and show Izzy that he has a heart under all that unbelievable hotness. It's kind of an Alex-y thing to do, like when she let her
like
take out his boob tube. Yeah. There's also some beauty in this scene where George and Burke find a way to get past like all that's happened in the past few episodes, and their bromance continues.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. And I like I like how there was nothing said. Like, it was just, like, this silent understanding that it's, like, yeah, we're okay.
Yeah, they didn't have, like, a heart-to-heart. Like, Burke just starts narrating the surgery, and it's, like, okay.
Yeah. So, show
we're
me.
We're bros again.
Yeah, we are bros once more. So, the song Show Me by John Legend, and I never knew that this was John Legend, but it's a fantastic song, starts playing when they separate the twins. Which is honestly, like, for all of the weirdness and disgustingness that this storyline brought, like, that shot, the angle of that shot, and then having the two beds, like, separate, like, that's the big payoff of this storyline there.
Mm-hmm. And then we get this little line. Like, I like how this episode, like, it's called Don't Stand So Close to Me, but we've gotten kind of a lot of, like, repairing of, like, relationships or, like, all this stuff. Like, we even get this kind of, like, little joke between Derek and Mark where, like, Derek is like, it'd be nice if every love triangle could be fixed with a scalpel. And then Mark is, if so, you'd have stabbed me with a 10-blade a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. And it says it in the Grey Matter blog. It's just a brief, fleeting second of camaraderie and friendship. Mm-hmm. And there's no other way I would have it. Because I really am a believer in the long game. Play the long game. Like, I don't want this huge scene where Derek is like, I forgive you, Mark, you're my brother. Like, I don't want that. I want real life moments where, like, yeah, this is how it would start. It would be one little joke that Derek finds himself, he's like, oh, I laughed at that, because because that pain is, like, slowly disappearing because time is healing us. And I like that.
Yeah, so then we get this scene where Meredith is updating Susan. I like this little part where, like, Meredith's just like, I'm sorry, you're very nice. You both seem so nice, but I don't know you, and you're not my family.
Yeah, and you know why this scene is so good is because Ellen Pompeo, as Meredith, so it's like the writing and the acting, communicates that Meredith both wants these people to be her family more than she wants anything. But it also, at the same time, she cannot let them in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, it's like this weird thing of, like, I feel like that's what she wants her mother to be like. But at the same time, she's like, but she's not my mother, and I have Ellis. Like, you know?
And I guess what Susan is saying is like, why would that stop you, though? Like, like, I think Meredith is almost afraid that, like, if she's just like, oh, Susan can be my new mom, it's, like, besmirching or, like, like trying to erase Ellis from her life, and she doesn't want to do that because mm-hmm. when it comes right down to it, like you do care what your parents think of you. Yeah, because Erica Hahn. Okay, so Erica and Christina in this scene, Erica's like, you remind me of myself, focused, intense, and cold. I don't mean that as a bad thing. Cold is good. The dating, the friends, the family. If you ask me, it's all overrated. And I bring that up because in 314, Christina will be dealing with that. So I don't want to mm-hmm. miss that.
And they cut, like, kind of briefly, like, you see back into, like, the Burke and George.
Yeah, they're cutting back and forth a lot here, which is good. Mm-hmm. I like that.
Which is cool. But I just like how, like, Burke is, like, reassuring him. Like, George, he's like, it's all right. Like, she's done it before. Like,
well, and what Becca's talking about is the running whip stitch, which the attention to detail on this show
so true.
Will yeah. never cease to impress me. They literally, and this is why I feel like maybe the George and his dad seems so, like, bothers me so much, because on any other show it wouldn't have been, like, noticeable, but, like, in 305 they made a point to establish that a running whip stitch is something above grade level for an intern, and mm-hmm. they did that, you know, that they did that so that they could bring it back at a critical time when it was George's dad. And I'm like, the attention to detail that Grey's Anatomy has is just what mm-hmm. makes this show so special.
Mm-hmm. And we get this little part from the Grey Matter blog, and they say, it's well watching his father's surgery that George comes to understand why Bailey wanted him far away. As soon as that saw blade starts cutting through his father's chest, he realizes he can't bear to watch. No matter how good a doctor he is, sometimes it's just too painful to be that close. Which we also kind of saw with Meredith, which is cool, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so Dr. Burke walks him through his dad's surgery in one of the sweetest moments that we've ever seen between these two. And after it's all over, we realize that their friendship will be okay.
Yeah. It's just such a satisfyingly simple way to repair mm-hmm. that relationship.
And now we get... The Chief is murdering this episode, killing it. Because we have this other great scene with him and Bailey.
See, it's interesting that you are, like all on board with the Chief this episode. And for me, I think that this is, like, the only thing that kind of redeems him in this episode. Like, I didn't think that this was a super amazing Chief episode.
I just, like, I like this speech and the speech with Burke. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like this speech so much. I cried again.
Of course. Do you want to do this dialogue?
Yeah, but I'm trying to figure out where I should start.
Just start at the beginning.
With Bailey?
Yeah.
Why don't you be Bailey then?
Okay. It undermines everything for my interns to see Yang go without punishment, for me to see Burke go without punishment.
Take a step back. Try and get some perspective.
So there will be no consequences for either of them?
What would you have me do? Fire both of them? End their careers? They made a terrible judgment call.
Which is what happened with Denny Duquette.
And they didn't kill anybody.
And I did.
You didn't kill Duquette, and I won't have you saying you did.
I was responsible for Izzy Stevens. I was responsible for Christina Yang. I am the common thread here. I lost them. Christina, Izzy.
Are not the same. Miranda, you raise them like children. And some of them make mistakes. Some of them disappoint you. And some of them, do you know what kind of strength it must have taken Yang to come to me to report on an attending, on her boyfriend? Do you see how much she's grown? You raise them like children. And some of them turn out exactly like you, Dr. Bailey.
Oh.
We got, like, that's so much there. Because, mm-hmm. like... I think the Chief, it's so crazy because, like, the Chief is like, I'm actually kind of proud of Yang. And yet again, such a Grey's Anatomy thing to do is just to flip your perspective right at the end and be like, but look at it this way. And I'm like, oh, like, it's always satisfying. It's like Grey's Anatomy. How do you do mm-hmm. this every episode?
So we get World Waits for You by Sun Volt mm-hmm. playing. Ugh. And she's back.
And we finally finish this Elena Pete Jake storyline.
I did kind of like the little touch where they, like, even though they're separated in all episodes, they've been talking about getting away from each other and how they still, like, want to be in, like, the same room.
No, that's cute, but Elena just needs to leave. Like, I think Pete and Jake are amazing, but Elena
she needs to, like, get some help.
Yeah,
I mean, all of them, I think, do, but...
I'm going to read this little part. The twins' relationship, in a nutshell, epitomizes what's going on with all our people. The twins, like our hospital interns, residents, and attendings, are a family in disarray, fighting and distant. They may think that they want to be apart from each other, but the truth is that they can't deny that they're family and they belong together. So that's actually kind of cool, because this is, yeah, I think, one of the first times that a patient was meant to represent everyone,
yeah,
instead of just a specific storyline. So that's actually pretty sweet. I like that.
And then we get just a short scene.
It's basically just Susan.
But I like, yeah, this, like, we could be your family if you wanted.
And, yeah, Susan goes, like, you have a mother, I know. I'm just saying that we could be your family, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's kind of bringing up the point that it's, like, you don't have necessarily just one family.
And I think that Meredith knows that, but I think that she's just so... Mm-hmm. Honestly, she's so traumatized from her childhood.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's hard when it's, like... a mother kind of like that, because, like, I feel like you really think of, like, you only having, like, really one mother figure in your life, you know, like, you have other families and stuff, but, like, no one ever really replaces, like, your mom or, like, mm-hmm, even your dad, really. And so I think it's, like, part of that too is, like,
well, Meredith just has extreme trust issues and extreme, yes, intimacy issues, and honestly, and the fact that
issues.
Well, and the fact that Derek, like, I think Derek, like, did a number on her trust issues, whether she wants to believe or not. Like, it seems that most people in her life have let her down. The people that she lets get close to have let her down. And so that's just a really tragic truth about her existence. And Eskimo Man has migrated to bear witness to this scene. He's like a creepy third party just watching over Meredith.
He's Derek.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So do you want to...
Yeah.
Can you read this?
Yes. So, Meredith makes a conscious effort to remain unaffected by Susan and Molly, which is hard, because Susan is so sweet and nurturing and giving, and everything that Ellis is not. And so when Susan hugs her and calls Laura Meredith's niece, it's all just too much to handle, and Meredith's forced to flee. But not before she's learned something, that being physically close can bridge an emotional divide. It can draw families in closer.
I love that. Like, honestly, being physically close can also bridge an emotional divide. Love it. And so we're in the intern locker room again, and it's just magic there. And
naturally, because they're the only interns in this hospital.
Yeah, which is something that I don't really like, but whatever. Meredith is back in her, I don't even know, colonial drummer boy outfit. And...
so true.
And she, although has been running away from a new family, she is fed up with intern family fighting, because that's her true family in life, like the family that has never burned her.
Mm-hmm.
And Meredith goes, let her off the hook, let Christina off the freaking hook. Izzy, you cut the LVAD wire, she stuck by you and did the echo. And you cheated on Izzy with SIF nurse, and she helped you study for your boards. And George,
Olivia,
when everyone was calling you 007, and George goes, she was calling me 007.
Yeah, which is, like, it's put in there for a reason.
Yeah, it's put in there because, like, when you actually try to think back over the show, Christina has done little to nothing nice for George in this show.
Mm-hmm.
312,
baby. It's setting up a scene that's coming up, yeah.
Yeah. But I also have to appreciate that they don't even call Olivia by her name anymore. They just call her SIF nurse. Like, does Meredith even know her first name? It's
probably
questionable.
Not.
Just let her off the hook. And then they apologize. And Christina goes, why can't you mind your own business? What is your problem? And then Meredith goes, you're my sister. You're my family. You're all I've got.
Because really, when you think about it, the one person who has not... done something to, like, betray Meredith's trust is Christina.
Yeah. When I first heard this, I was like, damn, this is a dark episode, because I was like, in your freaking face, Derek, like, pow, pow, pow. But Yeah, like
it just reminds me of like last episode and the, like she was there when you weren't.
Right.
And it's like,
and it, honestly, I kind of like how this scene throws that in the face of all the like hopeless Meredith and Derek shippers. You know what I mean? Because like, am I a hopeless Meredith and Derek shipper? Yes, but I do kind of like the show being like, hey, he's not that good of a guy. Like,
or like, he's good and like, yeah, he does a lot of great things for Meredith, but like,
don't forget
their relationship. I was about to say their relationship isn't the only like turning point for Meredith, or like,
yeah.
I don't know. Well, then I like the like little thing where they like lean on each other's head and yeah, it's like, I'm so tired. I know, me too.
It's so cute.
Mm-hmm. So then we get this weird scene with Callie and George, and really the only thing to say about it is that cardigan.
Yeah.
That George is wearing.
Petition to burn. I would sign.
Yep. Same.
What is that? And also, another thing that I do love about this episode is the brilliant lack of Callie. She was only in really two scenes, and it's been great. It's been a nice break, like a nice vacation.
But I do kind of like, because you were saying before that you didn't think George really got anything from his dad's speech, and I think this scene kind of shows you, like, he's not, like, he obviously is not, like, okay with Callie, but they kind of have this thing, like, where she's like, oh, you know, I was checking on your dad, and he's like, good, he's doing good, he's resting, okay, and they're like, okay.
Yeah.
And so it's, like, you know, like, he's realized, like, he's, like, I'm not angry anymore, but that doesn't mean I've, like, forgiven you.
Mm-hmm. Or gotten over it. What I got from that is that he is trying for the sake of his dad's, like, spirit, you know? I don't know if that's the right word, but it's, like, even though his dad isn't there to see him do this, he's trying because of his dad's speech.
Uh-huh. And then we get this short scene where Burke and Derek are going back upstairs, and I like the little like chuckling of like Christina goes and like stands in the elevator.
Mm-hmm. And this scene is 100% just to give Burke Tina hope, to communicate that like, I think it's to communicate that like, a relationship ending is a choice, not a fate.
Mm-hmm.
And Christina chooses to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
So now, in classic Grey's Anatomy fashion, we end right where we started, with Ellis manically pacing around the nursing home. It's nighttime this time, though. And the shaky cam that is used in this instance is so perfectly utilized. I love it. Love it. And Ellis is like, I couldn't stay with him. I didn't care that he's Meredith's father. I couldn't take it. And then Richard, and she just like starts breaking down. And Meredith, without really like stopping to second guess herself, just hugs her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love that kind of moment where like when she does kind of hug her, they like have that touch of Ellis recognizing Meredith and being like, Meredith, you know,
and like, she says like, mommy again, you know, like she did in 205. It's just interesting that like physical proximity, like getting up in her physical space, is what triggers moments of lucidity in Ellis Gray.
Well, I just love the kind of, like, thing of, like, that touch of, like, yeah, Ellis was a crappy mom. But I think, like, in this moment when, like, they're hugging, it's, like, but I think they both do really care about each other. And they just, like, it's a complicated relationship.
Yeah, you can't say, like, that Ellis doesn't love Meredith, but you can't say that she was, like, a good mom either.
Yeah.
But, like, the two hugs from the two different, quote-unquote, mothers in Meredith's life. Totally intentional, very clever. Like Meredith and Ellis's like hug to end the episode is like the only way to describe it is dark and twisty.
It I just is. Like it.
I don't no, know. And I love it. Like I would never say that as a bad thing. Like I actually think that this is a more compelling moment than Susan.
Especially when it like turns to like Ellis's face and you can kind of see her like
desperation. Almost
like pull like Meredith in tighter, you know?
Like she loves her daughter so much.
Yeah. Well, like, and even though like, you know, what she said at the beginning of the episode, it's like, I think she like in some weird way, shape or form realizes that like, she's glad that she had Meredith, you know?
Yeah. And it just this little brief moment from the blog, it says, Meredith takes a big step and decides to mother her own mother. And that closeness is exactly what Ellis needed.
Mm-hmm.
It also kind of speaks to, like, Meredith and Ellis have this, like, understanding about each other because they are so similar, you know? So, closing speech. At the end of the day, when it comes down to it, all we really want is to be close to somebody. So this thing where we all keep our distance and pretend not to care about each other, it's usually a load of bull. So we pick and choose who we want to remain close to. And once we've chosen those people, we tend to stick close by, no matter how much we hurt them. The people that are still with you at the end of the day, those are the ones worth keeping. And sure, sometimes close can be too close, but sometimes that invasion of personal space, it can be exactly what you need. Seriously count is zero. Season 3 is really letting me down with the seriously counts recently.
Seriously?
Yeah. Patient rankings. There were 3 and...
We have the exact same.
Not really debatable. Number 3, Harold O'Malley.
Just still wait, guys. Coming. His moment's coming.
That's it. Number 2, Jake and Pete.
Which arguably there should have been 4 patient rankings and Elena should have been number 4. Because she clearly needed Twisted Mister.
Honestly, Elena just disturbs me. Like, you know, we joke about Zona being, like, the worst human being to ever exist in the world of Grey's Anatomy, which is a statement that I still stand by. But Elena just, like, is on another level. Like,
can we imagine Zona and Elena being together?
Like sexually? Or, like...
No, like, in the same room. So nothing sexual.
And Jorge is like, oh, where's my wife?
Oh man. I just like it just ends there.
If like Zona is like the patient that like just angers me the most, like Elena's the one that disturbs me the most. Like, to the level of hatred that I have for Zona is the same level of just utterly disturbed.
I have so many questions. Anyway.
And we still don't have answers. And I'm sorry, folks, to all of you that came to this podcast for answers, but we never will. There might not be answers.
Like, don't want to know some of the answers.
Ugh, Jake and Pete, because and I really do like how they didn't symbolize one character but every character, which is really cool. And then number 1 was Molly and Laura. Just Molly having Laura is setting up. It was nice to see Molly again too, because like it was nice to kind of like bring that back from 222.
Also, her hair still is not.
Still questionable.
Worse than Callie's. I would just like to point that out.
Do you think that her hair is worse than Callie's? Because that is a big-ass statement to make.
The cut on her hair is pretty damn bad.
I think I might have to disagree with you. I think because of the utter lack of Callie in this episode...
I've gone delusional.
Yeah. Whatever. All I know is that by next episode, they will have fixed Callie's hair.
Make one change, you kind of already mentioned.
Make one change. Yeah, I already mentioned.
Hers, not mine.
Mentioned that, and I'm sticking by it. I would change that.
Whatever.
Yeah. So next week, we are talking about Season 3, Episode 11, which is called 6 Days, Part 1. It is the first half of a two-part episode. It's written by Krista Vernoff, our love. Directed by Greg Yantis.
Perfect pronunciation there.
I have
there.
No idea how to pronounce that. Yeantis?
Anyways.
Yeantis. Get in touch with us. You can do so on Twitter. Our account is @GreysUncut. Our email for longer questions or comments is greysanatomyuncut@gmail.com. And our website is greysanatomyuncut.home.blog. So any of those options to get in touch with us, please do. Thanks for listening. The two-part episode coming up. Pretty exciting.
We'll see you then.
Bye.